from the high desert and the great American Southwest. Happy to all. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be in the world's prolific time zones, every single one of them covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell, and I'm an Art Bell with a dilemma tonight that I'll tell you all about. Well, I can't tell you all about it. I'll tell you what I'm going to do about it, though. I've got two really heavyweight guests. I don't know if they're going to be heavyweight in the answers they give or not, but I've got two heavyweight guests coming on the air this evening on, among other things, the subject of HAARP. Now, I have a lot of really serious questions about HAARP. Really serious questions about HAARP. Dr. Joseph Resnick is one of them. He's an applied scientist. Oh, he's long resume. I'll tell you all about it. And Guy Kramer, both of them here ostensibly or mainly on the subject of HAARP. They hold patents. There are certain patents that I'm told they're not going to be able to talk about. Their appearance here had to be approved at the senatorial level by a senator. There were questions in the way they would answer them, bandied back and forth, and they had to get approval at a senatorial level. Now, so already I know I'm in, we're in for a big, well, a big unknown tonight, because we've got a couple of guys who know a lot more than they're going to be willing to say about something that I really want to know about. So it may not be an easy night. Be forewarned. Big full moon up there, and it feels like it, too. Then the dilemma, if that's not dilemma enough already, right? I got this email earlier with all of these questions and the scripted answers, you know, and I went, oh, man, what are we up to here? And I called Guy Kramer and said, listen, this is talk radio. We don't do scripts, you know. But turns out this was a sort of an approval process at the senatorial level to have them on there at all. Now, obviously, the one thing I don't want to do is I don't want to lose the opportunity to interview them. So I'm going to be a little careful here. I do have a dilemma about Dr. Resnick sent me a piece of information about the bird flu, something I told you I was very serious about last night. And it's a startling bit of information. Now, in the email, he says, please ask AB, that'd be me, to keep the lid on this for the moment. Well, I'm a talk show host. I don't keep lids on. I blow them off. That's what I do. And so here's what I think I'll do. I think I'll hold on to this, and we'll ask about it at the beginning of the interview. And if they won't say anything about it or say they can't, then before the show is over, I'll read it to you anyway. Now, I hope that doesn't lead to the show being over prematurely, if you follow me. We'll see. It's a full moon. It's a tough subject. And if you look at the, just before we get started with the world news, if you'll take a good look at the webcam photograph tonight, the one of me with a couple thumbs up, you know, usual pre-show kind of typical photograph that I took a few minutes ago. Behind me, you will see a very great deal of shortwave equipment. You know, I'm a ham operator. I've said it enough times on the show. I'm a very avid ham operator. I've been licensed consecutively since I was 13 years of age, and I'm 59 now. I have some very serious shortwave equipment. I have 5 acres of antenna, unlike any other. Except maybe our friends up in Alaska, HAARP. And I'm telling you, as I have told you in shows of recent weeks, that I'm very disturbed by what's going on in the ionosphere and very aware that something unusual is going on with our ionosphere, something very unusual. Frequencies that have, for all my life, been dependable every night to yield a certain result. Communicating with stations 200, 300, 400 miles away, that's been blown away. That usually ever so reliable ionosphere has just been blown away since September. And one of the possibilities, when you look at the various possibilities of what could be causing this, because the sun certainly has not been, I suppose it's been contributory, in the sense we've had some pretty big flares, but even at times when the sun was not flaring, this unusual, bizarre circumstance on shortwave has been the same. So the sun is not the factor. Something else is at work here. Now, some, I suppose, would screech normal cycles. Well, I've been there, and I've not. There's nothing normal about it to me, or most of the people I've talked to, my colleagues, for example, other hams, people who have been 40 and 50 years, as myself, depending on things being a certain way. They ain't that way anymore, and one of the possibilities is HARP. So it's going to be a serious show. And with the news, we will begin very seriously indeed. I grew up with him. I think many of us grew up with Johnny Carson, and he's gone. Johnny Carson, the quick-witted Tonight Show host who became a national institution, oh, he was, putting his viewers to bed for 30 years with a smooth nightcap of celebrity banter and heartland charm, died Sunday, 79, emphysema. He died early Sunday morning with his family by him. And I will miss him. You know, unlike certain celebrities, like the one sitting in this seat, who have retired a number of times. I mean, look, a lot of people in, I don't know, I guess these kinds of jobs, the broadcast media, sports, I don't know, whatever they do that they do it very well, and they retire, and then, of course, they want to go back to their love, and they do. It's inevitable. Carson didn't. He retired, and unlike many of us, stayed retired. He'll be missed, and I grew up with Johnny Carson. He was a national institution, and now he's gone. In fact, he really didn't do anything. He became a recluse after he retired. He may have appeared, I'm told, in a 1993 version of The Simpsons as voice, but otherwise you didn't see Johnny Carson anymore. So goodbye, Johnny. We will miss you. A howling blizzard slammed the Northeast as promised. It was going on during the program last night and Sunday. More than 2 feet of snow and hurricane strength gusts. Well, it's all obviously stopped air travel for thousands, keeping others off slippery highways. In fact, it was common in Michigan that people are driving as they usually do in this kind of stuff, like idiots. So don't drive like an idiot. If you don't know how to drive in snow and ice, don't. Really, I mean that. If you don't know how to drive in snow and ice, and there is an art to driving in snow and ice. I lived in Alaska 3 years, and you either learn or die. So don't. If you have that choice and you're not good at it, just don't, because you will not do well. And, you know, people are not driving well at all. So just stay home. A lot of news tonight. Nearly three decades before the September 11th attacks, a high-level government panel, it turns out, developed plans to protect the nation against terrorist acts ranging all the way from radiological dirty bombs, the subject of an HBO movie tomorrow night, to airline missile attacks, according to documents just declassified. The Associated Press just got hold of them. Quote, unless governments take basic precautions, we will continue to stand at the edge of an awful abyss. That's Robert Kupperman, chief scientist for the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, and that was written in 1977, so they knew this kind of thing was coming. I wonder how they missed it. The U.S. ambassador to Iraq acknowledged serious problems ahead of next weekend's election, but he gives assurances that great efforts are being made so every single Iraqi can vote. In an audio tape posted on the web, a speaker claiming to be Iraq's most feared terrorist declared fierce war on democracy, raising the stakes in the vote. fierce war against democracy. Huh. Rebels who have vowed to disrupt the balloting blew up a designated polling station near Baghdad and stormed a police station in Ramadi, west of the capital. So, what I did from the time I got up until, about 30 minutes before airtime, I watched playoff games. And in Pittsburgh, nobody apparently beats Brady and Belichick in a big game, and they sure didn't get beaten 41-27. So, New England, a dynasty, meets up with Philadelphia. And that was 27-10. Falcons lost 27-10. So there you've got it. It's going to be New England and Philadelphia in the Super Bowl. And also another death, Rosemary Woods, the devoted secretary to President Nixon, who said she inadvertently erased part of a crucial Watergate tape. That would be the famous or infamous 18-and-1/2-minute gap, has died. She died at 87 years of age. In a moment, we've got more. I want to get to the phones fairly quickly. However, I also want to read you more of this article that was only mentioned in passing last night. My guest, Sir Charles Schultz, said that referred to an atmospheric phenomena that a lot of it we don't know about. And indeed, I yanked out this story and read a little bit of it. A new atmospheric phenomena was caught on video by the crew of the space shuttle Columbia. Now, this occurred just days before the shuttle broke apart and it was just released. Astronauts relayed a video of this to NASA in real time during their 16-day flight, but the agency did not release the full data to researchers until several months after the mission's tragic end on 1 February 2003. All seven crew members killed, of course, when the shuttle exploded while re-entering the atmosphere. Colleagues from a university of in Israel spent more than a year analyzing the video, which was originally taken to study atmospheric dust, but a single frame of the video was the most important, representing just 33 milliseconds, showing a mysterious reddish glow in the sky, night sky, on 20 January 2003. One of the scientists said, "I'm not sure what we saw. I just know it wasn't something that we were used to seeing. It was something extraordinary. The glow occurred about 150 kilometers above the ocean near Madagascar and did not appear to be linked with thunderstorms in any way. This contrasts sharply with other events at similar altitudes which glimmer into being when electrical current travels upward from lightning clouds at altitudes of about 10 kilometers, called sprites." You've heard of those, right, elves? "These events take the shape of sort of jellyfish, downward-pointing carrots or donuts, and tend to occur within a horizontal distance of about 70 kilometers from lightning. But the closest lightning picked up by the shuttle's video camera was 800 kilometers away, so it wasn't lightning. From this unexpected glow that's been dubbed Tiger, transient ionospheric glow emission in red." That's what it stands for, TIGER. Transient ionospheric glow emission in red. "Most sprites and elves emerge within a few milliseconds of the nearest lightning strike, but TIGER took 250 milliseconds to leap into view after this lightning struck 800 kilometers away, suggesting the two events were not in any way linked." So what the hell is it, this TIGER? Gee. You don't think this could be another man-made something or another, do you? This is really, really going to be an interesting program tonight. Let's go to the phones. Let's begin on the phones. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Art. This is Art from Detroit.
Okay, pick up your phone, please, Art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is Art from Detroit, listening in on CKLW 800.
Yes, sir.
And I think I sent you a few emails back in the summer when you were mentioning about, you know, flare activity, watch for the aurora activity and stuff. I've been involved with some astronomy groups for about the past 20, 30 years.
Yes.
And naturally, like you mentioned, there's 11-year high and low cycle.
That's right.
And I remember back in the 70s, early 70s, because I was in the service with the, if I'm allowed to say it, Coast Guard. I was serving on the Great Lakes here. And normally, for the area I was in, or located, or stationed, basically, we shouldn't have had any auroras. And I remember about from 71 to 75, 76, and this was even long after I got out of the service, down here in Detroit, we'd see northern lights probably about maybe once a week or once every other week.
Sure, you're at a latitude where you would see northern lights very easily. Now, a couple of times in the last several years, northern lights have come to the southern latitudes, even as far as myself here in the desert. But I want to be clear once again, so that you're clear when we get the guests on here. The phenomena that I'm talking about is, as far as I know, completely unprecedented since about September. Frequencies that always, always have been reliable for short-range communication, meaning 200-400 miles, within an hour of sunset, these frequencies, 3 and 4 megahertz area, have been shut down like somebody closed a big steel trap door. It's just not normal. It is abnormal. It's like somebody shuts the door, boom, it's over. And the highest viable frequency for that kind of communication is 2 megahertz or even lower, down into the broadcast band. This phenomenon has been dipping. And some of you can certainly testify to that fact. When I say it gets down to the broadcast band, that means that radio stations that you would normally hear, you know, 50, 100, 200, even 300 miles away, big boomers, you listen one night, and they're not there. You can't even hear them. When it gets particularly bad, it goes all the way down to the broadcast band, and that kind of thing begins to happen. Well, we've been getting tons of email here that, guess what, it's been happening a lot. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hi, Art. How you doing?
I'm okay, sir.
Yeah, God, really sorry to hear about Johnny Carson. That's one individual I would have loved to have been able to meet and say hello to. Of all the celebrities, he's the only one that's really stands out that way for me.
Well, he stands out in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Listen, I started reading The Day After Roswell with Colonel Phil Corso.
Yes, of course.
And that was like 97 copyright, I guess, huh?
That sounds about right.
Yep. Yeah, I was just checking it out to make sure, and I heard all your interviews with him and everything, and he mentioned HARP in the book, you know, which I didn't read at the time, but I just read it. I'm reading it right now. I'm almost finished. But he says it's a high-altitude research project is what HARP stands for.
Roughly, sir, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I didn't ever recall hearing that before, but... Anyway, all those packages they put together back then all had to do with fighting off the alien threat that we apparently have had going on for quite some time. And
well, maybe not. I don't know about fighting off an alien threat. I think this is more like a threat to us. And if we have to fight anything off, it's a threat to us. Now, perhaps we will hear differently tonight. Maybe they'll cancel the whole interview, I don't know. But something's going on with HARP. HARP is having an effect on one of the natural pieces of our world, the ionosphere, or something is. And my guess would be HARP. We know it's active, we know it's operational, we know it's coming up near full power, and what we don't know is what they intend to do with it. We don't know. Whether we'll find that out or not tonight, I really can't say, because I know there are an awful lot of aspects of this they cannot talk about. Now, whether they're able to talk about the larger picture with reference to HAARP, I guess we're going to find out, or whether some of the goals of HAARP have to remain classified, or whether only the details of technically what they're doing with HAARP have to remain classified, or I don't know. I guess we're going to find all of this out. That plus the little curveball they threw me here, causing my dilemma with regard to the bird flu. It's something I desperately really would like to take the lid off of for you tonight, and will one way or the other before the program's over. Sometimes being a talk show host presents you with dilemmas, decisions that are very tough to make. And so what I'll do is I'll make a decision on this, and one way or the other before the program's over, I'll read it to you. How's that? From the high desert, in the middle of absolute, well, you can't say absolute darkness with a full moon, can you? I'm Art Bell, and this is the best of the night.
Code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5. And dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is. Good morning, everybody. All right, I've got to note it. Have to note it. We just got several calls, several fast blasts, and we checked the official predictions made at the beginning of the year. It is number 11. Whoever you are, number 11, during the traditional Christmas and New Year sort of span, we always do the predictions. Number 11 was Johnny Carson passes. So those of you trying very hard to tell me that indeed that came to pass, it did come to pass. There is one, a very sad ding, I'm afraid. Number 11, Johnny Carson indeed passed rather quickly in the year. In a moment, we'll return to open line.
It's Ira.
You know, even though I'm not going to read you word for word this email yet, I do have a lot of concerns about the bird flu. I really do. It's like the scientists have been calling this one, sort of almost saying it's going to happen, it's going to come. it's going to jump species, and we're going to have the bird flu, human to human. It's like they've been saying that. It's like, what do they know that we don't? Why would they be right about this kind of thing? So a lot of concerns about it, and indeed they're worried about, and the word they use is pandemic. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. I seem to remember in one of your end-of-the-year prediction shows this past year that one of your callers predicted that Johnny would die this year.
That's right. Number 11.
Yeah.
Number 11. So, sadly, that was a correct prediction and very shook him awfully quick.
Yeah, you almost wonder because of the time factor if it might have been a healthcare worker somehow attached to the case.
I don't know. I mean, I suppose you could jump to some sort of conclusion like that, because Johnny Carson, you know, I had no clue, and I don't think the rest of the world really did either, that he was ill, emphysema, so that would have been a fairly long-term protracted illness, I would think. But he kept it from everybody. And so it was, unless it was something like, you know, a healthcare worker close to him or something of that order, there shouldn't have been a hint of it, and you would have imagined Johnny would have had another 10 years easily, because he, you know, you just never heard anything. So, of course, it's a really big shock. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. How are you doing?
Quite well, thank you. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. I have a question, but you're the only person that can get away with asking it. I think they'd blow me right off the line. I want to know if Harp has the capability of breaking a tectonic plate.
I'll ask for you. I don't. What I do see the technology doing, I can't even make the leap in my mind to see how it could do what you've just suggested, but I will ask.
I worked it out mathematically, and I think they have the capability to do that.
Based on what?
I'd rather not say, if you don't mind, but there's certain things that aren't right about the quake in Indonesia. And also, the animals are fleeing. The undersea life, the whales. I believe Ed Ames told you that there wasn't any whales off Hawaii. I believe you must have heard hundreds of squid washed up dead on the California coast.
I heard something about that.
There's no autopsy report yet, and there should have been one. And I think something happened, and I also believe that they have a satellite connected with HAARP, and they're doing wonderful things like you saw with the hurricanes and the blizzards with to our weather. I've never seen fronts 3,500 miles long.
All right, here's the deal. I think that you may be onto something, and there may be something else going on with all of this, but I don't necessarily attribute it to HAARP. With what little I do know about HAARP, and the things I think it might do, which are scary enough all by themselves, I don't see them having any effect on tectonic plates. Even with immense amounts of radiation, and even understanding that they seem to have some vision that HAARP could reveal underground tunnels and bunkers. And the only way it could do that is to bounce so hard off the ionosphere and to re-radiate so hard that it would literally be ground penetrating in some manner. So, you know, it'd be a pretty wild guess to go from measurement of something like that hard enough to affect something like that far down. But I'll ask. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hey, Art, this is Brooke. I'm calling from Rhode Island.
Yes, Brooke.
I have a HAARP or a hum update for you.
Well, which is it?
Well,
I heard
a different version of the hum last Thursday night that I have never heard, and I've been hearing this phenomena for 4 years.
You're going to have to fill me in on what hum you do have. What are you talking about?
It's the ELF, the low-frequency monotone hum that basically just goes, but for hours and hours.
And
last Thursday night.
This is something you feel in your home. Is that what you're telling me? Hear and feel or whatever?
Yes. I first discovered it in Vermont, and I called you a few times from Vermont, and you were really wonderful, and you're one of the few people that understands this phenomena, which is why I'm extremely fond of you.
I don't understand it, though. If I did, I would explain it all to you. I don't. These hums,
Well, you're open to it, Art. That's what I mean.
Yes, I'm open to it. Of course. Yeah, of course.
But I have a buddy who's a senior federal agent in Homeland Security, and he has always believed me, and he is incidentally in Las Vegas. And he said that one of his partners in his office has what he thinks I have, some sort of extrasensory hearing capacity.
People do have these talents. Some of them, they hear things that others don't. Animals hear things we don't, right? And some humans, you could assume, would have a hearing that would go beyond the normal range of other human beings. So that could be. There are a variety of experiments going on, not just in our atmosphere, but also in our waters. And a lot of people, okay, here's a story for you. I tell you, I collect these things. A scientist, the headline is, Ship Begins Sound Wave Research Off Yucatan. Scientists working off Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula began using sound waves to search for information about an asteroid that may have wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. The research project began despite concerns among environmental activists who say this technology could harm whales, sea turtles, and several variety of fish in the Gulf of Mexico. Mexican authorities say the project is within, quote, acceptable limits and will be closely monitored. So this project apparently is going to use sound waves to try and figure out what happened to the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. I'm not sure how it works, but they are concerned about all of these marine mammals that may have a problem with it, beaching themselves and that sort of thing. So that's going on. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. This is Patrick.
Yes, hello, Patrick.
I wanted to talk to you about the ionosphere a little bit.
Okay.
I heard you mention that earlier.
Okay, get close to your phone.
Yeah, can you hear me better now?
Much better, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry about that. If you think about the ionosphere, it has basically one very primary function, and it serves as a filter. You're familiar with the radio spectrum. There's some very high energy just above what we see as or perceive as ultraviolet-like. And when that gets through the ionosphere, that's, for example, what causes sunburns, and it can, incinerate things if it gets through at higher frequencies. And nastier stuff above that. The ionosphere exists primarily because of two things. Number one, that, again, we're bombarded by radiation from the sun, and secondarily, we have this gigantic molten mass of iron spinning here that is our core of our planet, and it has poles that we refer to as the magnetic field. And the good folks at NOAA have been taking pictures of this molten mass with satellites for the last couple decades or so, and there has been a shift in the currents, and there are huge spots that are out of phase now, and the change is exponential. It was slow at first, and it's been increasing and becoming more rapid. And the prevailing theory is that our Earth's magnetic field is going to go through a flip-flop, and that there's evidence that that's happened before. There's core samples that have been taken in the eastern part of the state here of Oregon, where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And there's places, for example, our mass transit rail line.
No, we know it's flipped
cuts
before.
Through a tunnel. They have core samples from the tunnel that.
Yeah. We know it's flipped before, and will again.
And there's a failsafe to the ionosphere. When the magnetic field collapses and reaches its zero point, and the ionosphere fails to function, and that failsafe is the atmosphere. And what happens is the oceans heat up and release large volumes of water vapor, which goes up into the atmosphere. Being heated, it rises as high as it can to its maximum specific gravity, and the Earth's surface cools.
I've heard this.
We call that an ice age.
I've heard about this so-called failsafe. I hope that's right.
Well, we call that an ice age.
Mm-hmm.
And, during the more severe ice ages throughout history, there are corresponding core samples that show the magnetic field flip-flopping four or five times within a period of just a few years.
Hmm.
And as, the Earth stabilizes to its new polarity. And so to tie this all together, this is just a theory that I've discussed with a few people, or I don't have a lot to back it up, but that HARP may be an attempt to be able to set up an artificial magnetic field to keep the Earth from freezing over solid.
I got it.
All right. Make the ice age survivable.
I've got it. All right. So, Harp, saving our butts from otherwise what would be a rough ride in a magnetic reversal. I don't know. Good theory, actually, with a sound basis behind it, but theory. I don't know. And it could be anything from that to the scientists just can do it, so they're doing it, and they're going to see what happens. These are, you know, some of the questions that we're going to be asking tonight. I mean, do they really know what is going to happen when they hit the ionosphere with a billion watts of power and modulated frequencies designed to actually have a sum and difference and produce a chain reaction in the ionosphere? Do we really know what that's going to do? Probably not. So is it one of those cases where the scientists are just going to go ahead and do it because they can do it and see what happens? Or do we really have solid reason to believe it will do some certain specific thing? On the first time caller line, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Bell, this is David calling from Salton City, California. I'm a longtime fan and a past guest on your fabulously informative program. I wrote a book called Sunstroke.
This is your full name, please.
David Kagan.
David Kagan,
yes,
wrote Sunstroke.
That's
right, and you were a guest.
Yes, sir.
Cool.
I had the time of my life on your program. I learned so much about how important talk radio really is.
It really is.
And I want to thank you so much for mentioning my book on last night's smashingly good show with Sir Charles.
Yes, it was, and your book will always be with me, David, always.
Thank you, Mr. Bell, from the bottom of my heart.
Since you're here,
yes,
and
sir,
since you wrote Sunstroke so long ago, to hear Sir Charles on this program,
yes, sir,
telling you that it's a reality, that a private company, Gene Myers and other folks have got it together, and they're going, going to do what you wrote about. Well, they're going to go the whole project to pull power out
exactly
from space. Yeah,
absolutely amazing. I am elated that finally a solar power satellite apparently is going to be getting off the ground. I wish them the best of luck. However, I just have a few quick comments to make on last night's show, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
All right, sir. I admire Sir Charles' unbridled enthusiasm regarding the actual deployment of a microwave solar satellite.
Yeah.
However, I do feel he kind of glossed over the detrimental environmental effects that we did discuss during my interview on your show.
Think so?
Yes,
there was that magic moment where we lost phone contact, and his primary and his backup number both didn't work. I thought he sounded a little chagrined when he came back from that and
absolutely
said, well, lots and lots of safeguards, Art. That's what we need.
Exactly. And I was pretty flabbergasted that he did leave the air for that period of time.
Mm.
And, well, you never know. Maybe someday we'll find out the rest of that story.
Yeah, he could have had a whole discussion with somebody, huh?
Yes, sir. Possibility. I would like to say real quick that Sir Charles repeatedly did state that a microwave satellite will only generate microwave heating on the Earth and in the atmosphere equivalent to the light of a full moon.
And that it would have a heating effect of 1/100th of a degree, I believe.
Centigrade, yes.
Yeah.
I would just like to point out that according to the U.S. Office of Technological Assessment, a document that I still have right before me on my desk, it's titled Solar Power Satellites. Anybody in your listening audience around the world can Google solar power satellites, go up to an actual document that I printed out here, and it will explain that such a satellite, according to the magnitude that Sir Charles is speaking about, would induce heating of at least 23 milliwatts per square centimeter on the ground, which the document does state is enough to cook biological tissues and people, animals, and plants. I in no way wish to infringe on the success of the Space Island Group's solar power satellite deployment in 2012. My objective in writing Sunstroke is just to educate folks regarding some of these environmental concerns.
Possible dangers, even.
Yes, sir.
And so you think he glossed over that?
Unbridled enthusiasm, yes, to explain the workings of the project. I feel that he did kind of gloss over that, and I'm just...
All right. Let me back up a little bit. I mean, yes. He did suggest, though, that any... For example, if the satellite did the thing he claims it can't, and it wandered, that the amount of heat at any specific point on the ground, if all the fail-safes failed... would not be enough to be French frying things as it goes along. Do you flat out disagree with that?
Well, just let me point out in a response to that question.
That's the big question.
Yes. Do you remember those Sir Charles and his group? They do intend to use a microwave solar satellite to, as a Pied Piper, as you pointed out on air, to draw a hurricane, say, away from the East Coast.
That's right.
And due to heating up,
The ocean,
ambient temperature, yes.
Heating the water.
Yes.
In the top layers, I believe he said, and I said something like, microwave Pied Piper.
Exactly.
And so you're saying if it can do that to the water.
Yes.
And we have water in our bodies.
Exactly.
I mean, this is microwave, just like when you go to your oven and you put a cup of coffee in and hit a minute to make it nice and hot.
Absolutely.
The same kind of power, right?
Right. It's all microwave, and it does involve some surface heating. So it does. It's not one great step of logic to realize that if it can heat up the ocean to draw a hurricane away from, say, the East Coast.
Yes.
Well, then I would say, based on that fact that he stated.
I sure wish you could have made it through last night, brother.
I tried, sir. It was a wonderful program. And again, I really wish to thank you for mentioning sunstroke, not only with Sir Charles, but over the years you have approached many guests with the subject matter.
How can you not? It's an obvious concern. If they ever were to launch this sort of thing, and here they go.
Yes, if I have 1 second left, I'd just like to tell you that the Japanese in the early 80s, they actually deployed a solar power satellite successfully in a very low Earth orbit. It did, for a few minutes, beam down space solar power to the Earth and was converted into AC electricity.
Really? Only a few minutes?
Just a few minutes. It was basically a sub-satellite.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so it was a very short experiment.
Yes. However, it was a monumental experiment because it did prove conclusively...
that it can be done.
Yes.
Listen, all right, we're out of time. David Kagan.
Thank you.
David Kagan, author of Sunstroke, one of my favorite science fiction books, commenting on last night's show with Sir Charles Schulz. A little too... What was it Mr. Greenspan said? Irrational exuberance? Anyway, it's going to be a hell of a show tonight. Don't go anywhere.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd owe.